DeSantis is warning residents of his state to now prepare for Hurricane Dorian. In Miami Beach, Public Works Director Roy Coley says there's a sense of urgency.
We're preparing for the worst and hoping for the best. But we are a low-lying barrier island and subject to flooding. So we're preparing as though we're going to have a direct hit.
Residents are also advised to have at least 7 days of food, water, and medicine on hand. Now the storm is expecting to make landfall late Sunday or early Monday. The Justice Department's Inspector General sharply criticized James Comey on Thursday, saying in a report that the former FBI director violated bureau policy in handling of memos that he wrote after conversations with President Trump. The 83-page report says that Comey sets a dangerous example for the over 35,000 current FBI employees. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
You knew the risks when you decided to drive drunk. There could be a crash. People could get hurt or killed. But that didn't stop you, did it? You knew you could get arrested. You could incur huge legal expenses. And you could possibly even lose your job. You were well aware of the consequences of driving drunk. But one thing's for sure.
Test, here we go. What
test.
Happened? All right.
Don't worry, everything is under control.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our program, Sharing the Hope, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce Radio. We're just a couple girlfriends sitting around today chatting, so if we giggle a little bit, bear with us. My name is Rocky, and I'm one of the family support coordinators at Prevention Resources. We work in the Family Support Center and provide support to anyone in Hunterdon, Somerset, or Mercer counties who has a loved one with a substance use disorder. We meet with family members one-on-one, in person, or via phone, email, or text. All of our services are free. You can contact us at 908-782-3909. This show, Sharing the Hope, is on every Thursday from 5 to 6 o'clock. We broadcast live on Facebook, and the shows will be posted so you can listen at your convenience. Follow our Facebook page, Sharing the Hope, and we welcome your comments and suggestions for future guests and topics. So I am very fortunate and excited today to have as my guests Marielle Huffnagel and Morgan Thompson. Marielle serves as Executive Director for the Ammon Foundation, the philanthropic arm of Ammon Labs that provides scholarships for individuals in recovery to pursue education. Morgan is the CEO of Prevention Links, an organization that takes a leadership role in the prevention of drugs, alcohol, and tobacco and other issues. But today, we're wearing our New Jersey Coalition for Addiction Recovery Support Advisory Committee hats. That was a mouthful. Which we may be referring to this as CARS, Coalition for Addiction Recovery Support. Morgan is the co-chair of NJ CARS, and Marielle is the chair of the conference committee that we will be discussing today. And I want to thank you both for taking time out of your very busy schedules to be here today.
We're very happy to be here with you, Rocky.
Thank you. So I think before we start, I just want to acknowledge that tomorrow is International Overdose Awareness Day and that there have been many events being held around the state in the last couple of days. Also tomorrow there was one in Raritan Valley Community College last night for Raritan and Hunterdon. It's very powerful to sit in on one of those. I want to send love and support to all the families who have lost a loved one to overdose. And I am one of those. I lost my beloved sister, 39 years old, 15 years ago. Now, on a positive note, September 1st kicks off the 30th anniversary of National Recovery Month.
Ooh.
Yay! So it's going to be joining the forces for recovery. Together we are stronger are their theme. So let's talk about what CARS is before we get to talk about the actual conference.
Sure. So as you said, Rocky, NJ CARS stands for the New Jersey Coalition for Addiction Recovery Support. So we're a statewide organization, and we're made up of individuals who are in recovery, who support recovery, who work in the peer recovery support space, which I guess we'll talk more about what
yes,
that means.
Please.
As well as organizations that provide recovery support services. And I think it's important to just kind of distinguish, you know, what is recovery support? How is it different from treatment? And Mariel, please chime in at any point. But the way I like to think about it is, you know, we know that, or there's increasing acceptance of the fact that substance use disorders are chronic conditions, and that even once a person has stopped, you know, who is abstinent or has reduced their use to a point that it's not as problematic, or they're just looking to improve their well-being, you know, throughout the trajectory of their recovery, they're going to need different types of support. And so for some people that starts with treatment, for others it doesn't. But for anyone who has experienced a substance use disorder, the availability of services that are really non-clinical most of the time and that, you know, don't necessarily involve any type of therapy or anything like that, but just involve, you know, increased well-being, participation in life, relationship building, all those skills that everybody needs, but that are particularly challenging when you're in the early stages of recovery from a substance use disorder. So, there you go.
I think it's also important to think, at least for me, it was helpful to think about other chronic conditions, mm-hmm. right? And looking how all, probably, if not definitely most, have some sort of continuum of care, right? And with substance use disorder, we've primarily looked at it as an acute condition, mm-hmm. right? And we've treated it as an acute condition, right? Which means maybe 28 days in treatment, most likely probably just a couple of days in detox. And then we all sort of kind of scratch our heads and look at these really unfortunate, astronomical overdose rates, mm-hmm. crime rates, you know, all of these tragic and disheartening statistics that are associated with substance use disorder, and we're kind of like, but we're sending people to treatment, right? And we're pouring all of this money into the opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. Very little of that money has been put on the back end after treatment, right? Looking at how do we help people, how do we support people, how do we empower people to be able to rebuild their lives, which may be even more important with someone with a substance use disorder than a different chronic condition, because the deterioration of one's internal and external circumstances when living with a substance use disorder mm-hmm. happens sometimes much more rapidly than potentially someone with breast cancer or diabetes. And so really looking at, like, how do we holistically wrap around somebody post that immediate, pervasive, acute need that presents so that we can stop continuing to go back to that acute point.
Yeah, like a revolving door. Right. Would you mind, Mariel, the analogy that you used when your mom had breast cancer and the kind of recovery support that she received, because I think that's really helpful, sure. and a lot of people can relate to that, sadly.
Sure. So I think the analogy is really important, and I think that just that in all areas of my life, analogies help me to comprehend on mm-hmm. a deeper level. But so first, I think it's important to say that there was preventative screening, right, for
Good
breast
point.
Cancer. So they were able to catch it in an early stage, luckily, in my mom. And then once she was diagnosed with a stage 2 cancer, she was immediately treated. There was no challenge from the insurance company. There was no, you know, worry of, you know, denial of care. So I think that's important in the analogy, too.
You mean they didn't wait till it became stage 3 or 4 before
right.
they would take care of it?
Right. Okay. They didn't say, you know what, come back in a year mm-hmm. when the lump is larger and we've gone into a more terminal, you know, life-threatening type of cancer,
right.
and
right.
then we'll treat you. And so even though that's not directly correlated to recovery supports and that continuum of care, I think the whole analogy really paints the picture of the disparities mm-hmm. between someone else with a chronic, you know, relapsing condition and someone with a substance use disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And so then she was offered all sorts of treatment, and she was also able to choose the treatment. She was recommended certain treatments, but she was also able to make choices, right? And her doctors didn't just say, this is your treatment plan, and this is what you're going to do. They asked for input, And they wrapped around her holistically way before treatment was over, right? They talked about throwing out her microwave. They talked about a change in diet. They talked about, you know, providing emotional support while she was going through this treatment. So it was already a holistic approach. It wasn't just like go for chemo and good luck, right? And then on the last day when her treatment plan had concluded, there was a sit-down about, so now what? Because it was just the beginning. It wasn't the end, right? And so they talked about, well, you have to come for this annual test, and you have to come for this test every 6 months, and you have to see these doctors every so often. And most importantly, what we also have is we have a survivor's center that's in your county. Mm-hmm. And what happens here is all sorts of survivors from cancer come and they gather, and there's free workout equipment, there's free exercise classes, there's free meditation, there's counselors on standby, and there's peer support groups where other survivors talk about the ups and the downs of their recovery. Because, Lorraine, cancer is a relapsing condition, and we want to do everything in our power to keep you in remission.
Amazing.
Right? And so think about the last day of someone in treatment, right? And even at the best treatment centers, this is not a knock on treatment. There sometimes is, you know, a post-treatment plan, but it's usually very, very limited. Mm-hmm. And it's also because there are a lot of services that are lacking in the community, so it's difficult to connect somebody from treatment to all of these services that either don't exist or are not known about,
right?
And so I think why I care so deeply about NJ CARS is because it's about unifying. First, it's about lifting up the fact that people need recovery support, and it's a valuable part of the continuum. But then just as importantly, I think it's about unifying and connecting and shedding light on some of the really incredible work that is already going on, and then helping to build on that and not duplicate. So if you know down the street there's a recovery community center three blocks that way, you probably don't need to open one, right? But maybe there's no recovery housing in your community, right? And so so that's what I think is so important about CARS. It's not just the highlighting that there is a need. It's also about unifying and lifting up and expanding what's existing.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so typically for people who are listening that are, you know, have not unfortunately had to deal with this situation, the norm is you go for 5 days, 7 days, 28 days is even quite difficult. And then you get discharged. No discharge plan, typically. And you go back to where you live, and you've got your friends who are probably using, and all of those old triggers, and we wonder why people keep relapsing over and over again. So this is so important. Can we talk about some of the examples of recovery support? So you use the term recovery centers a lot. We happen to have one here in Flemington that's open 2 days a week. We have no funding for it, so we are working very, very hard to make it more available. But recovery high school, I know, Morgan?
Right. There's a whole array of different types of recovery support services, and they're really some of them are tailored to particular populations, like recovery high schools are tailored to youth, obviously. Recovery community centers are a nice example because they cast a wide net. It's very similar to what you described, Marielle, the survivor's center that your mother was able to access. So it's a place that is, it's very important that it's accessible, where people in recovery can come together for support, self-help, maybe access to wraparound services, social services, and linkage to whatever supports they might need. But also a really important piece is just an opportunity to have fun in recovery, social activities, recreation. And so that's a lot of the type of things that go on in recovery community centers. Another big gap that recovery community centers can fill is offering different varieties of peer support programs. So for a lot of people, we think of Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, other 12-step programs as kind of the standard long-term recovery support. But there are some people who don't jive with the 12-step approach or who might want to be able to access some other type of pathway of recovery. And so recovery community centers are a place where we can be purposeful about bringing in different options for self-help. So
that's
here,
a huge deal to honor all paths to recovery.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And so I think when I got into recovery 10 years ago, there were two recovery community centers in the state that were really, you know, first of all, that had funding and were sustainable. And over the last number of years, a lot of community-based grassroots recovery centers have cropped up around the state, and so there's a lot more availability of recovery community centers than there was 10 years ago. And there's also now we're seeing the state expand their support of recovery community centers. So another three are going to be opening up, and hopefully more in the coming months. Recovery high schools, you mentioned. So we have three in the state currently, and this isn't something that, you know, was started here in New Jersey. Recovery high schools have been around for several decades, and they're really generally public schools, charter schools. You know, there's different models, but they're a place where high school students, instead of going back to their home school after treatment, you know, where they might face all the, you know, various relapse triggers that you mentioned, can pursue their recovery and their education under one roof and be supported. Marielle, you want to talk a little bit about housing and
So on the continuum is absolutely, you know, what we can call under a big umbrella recovery housing, right? And that can look like a bunch of different things, right? That can be connected to a clinical program or not. It can be highly supervised, or it could simply just be, you know, alcohol and drug free, you know, safe, sober living for people who are paying rent and going about their business, you know.
Is that what's called an Oxford house?
So, yes and no.
Okay.
An Oxford house is one example of that. There also are privately owned sort of recovery houses. Sometimes it's also, you know, people talk about three-quarter way houses, halfway houses. And they're all slightly nuanced, right? And I think it also depends on who the owner and operator is and who the residents are. That, you know, I wish that there was just one standard across the board, across the country, across the world, you know, guideline, but it's not quite that simple. But I would say that basically it's about providing safe housing for people in recovery, most often early recovery, but not necessarily, with different levels of, you know, supervision or wraparound services connected to them. Collegiate recovery is very similar to what Morgan talked about with recovery high schools, but it's about people in recovery who are attending college, most often four-year colleges, but it's emerging on some two-year county college campuses as well, so that there are recovery support services on campus and a peer network on campus, because college can seem very recovery hostile, and it's unacceptable for someone to have to choose between maintaining and sustaining their recovery and pursuing education. And that's a hot topic for me because it connects to my personal experience and it also connects to what I do now professionally. And I think for too long we have sort of relegated people in recovery to living these mediocre, humble lives, right? And that in order to maintain one's recovery, you have to kind of keep it small and simple. And I think that does a tremendous disservice to the incredibly intelligent, talented, creative, capable human beings that are people in recovery. And I think it also continues to further stigmatize the recovering population.
And so then just generally, and this covers everything we've discussed already and more, is the idea of peer recovery support. So individuals who are, you know, maybe a little further along, who are stable in their recovery, who receive specialized training around how to share their story in a purposeful way and how to provide structured support to people who are either seeking recovery, struggling, or in the early stages of their recovery process. And it's very powerful. It's very different than a counselor-patient relationship. It's a lot more non-hierarchical. It's you know, it's really just about kind of meeting as peers, and it's beneficial for both the peer helper and the peer who is receiving the support. And so there's been just an explosion of the peer workforce here in New Jersey. There's a credential for it now. There's, you know, availability of training. And it's a career pathway now for a lot of people in recovery who want to do that type of work. Obviously, people in recovery do all variety of types of work, but for those who, you know, really want to use their personal experience to change the lives of others, peer support has come a long way. And what's interesting about peer support is that, you know, we certainly think about the services that can be provided after treatment, but the services can actually help during treatment, having a peer involved in as part of a treatment team, and also in engaging someone in treatment or in, you know, helping them to initiate recovery while they're still, you know, maybe active in their substance use condition. There's programs like opioid overdose recovery programs in the hospitals. When somebody has overdosed and been revived with naloxone, a peer may be sent to the hospital to meet with them, to talk with them, to develop a recovery plan, and be their point of contact whenever they're ready to take any type of step towards
that
their
was our
well-being.
Interview last week.
Well, there you go. So you know all about that already. Never mind. Yeah. But there's lots of different environments where peers can help be that bridge, whether it's just outreach, you know, walking around, you know, in a there's mobile units, working with law enforcement, talking with folks who've been arrested. There's so many opportunities that historically we've just missed and overlooked to connect people with the possibility of recovery.
And even to help people get to appointments, get to court dates, things like that when they get out of treatment.
Right.
Right. So I need to take a break, and we will be right back.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Welcome back to Sharing the Hope. I'm sitting here with my wonderful guests, Marielle and Morgan, and we are talking about New Jersey Coalition for Addiction Recovery Support. I just want to go over a little commercial for some local events coming up. This weekend in Clinton, on September 1st, we're having Recovery at the River Festival and Cornhole Tournament. Sounds fabulous, right? There are going to be vendors, yoga, door prizes, live music. I think they have a lot of teams signed up to do cornhole. It's going to be wonderful. Anyone is welcome to attend. Just ask that there is no drinking taking place at the river. Also, September 11th, we have another Narcan training coming up at Prevention Resources. If you are interested, you can call our office, 908-782-3909. And we have a professional conference coming up October 25th at Raritan Valley Community College. If you are interested, again, call our office, or I will try to put the flyer on our Facebook page. So let's pick up where we left off. So I think we talked quite a bit about recovery supports. I'm glad we spent some time going over that because I really, for a long time, did not know what that meant. And I will send a shout out to Halfway Houses because I believe that I am alive and sober today because I had a 6 months in a halfway house and 6 months in a three-quarter house. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important to work in the community or go to school, deal with the stresses of life and life's terms, and then have a safe place to come home to at night and learn how to live again and also learn how to have fun, which is what you talked about. So CARS has their first conference coming up September 28th from 10 to 3 o'clock at TCNJ, the College of New Jersey, and it is called Recovery Ecosystems, Impact Through Education, Innovation, and Collaboration. Let's chat about what an ecosystem even means for those who are not science majors.
So I remember learning about it in the fourth grade.
Oh.
So an ecosystem, right? You think of like the rainforest or, you know, something like that is an ecosystem. All the different, you know, functions that are working together to that depend on each other, whether they know it or not. And I think that's what we were trying to get at with that topic of a recovery ecosystem, is that we have all these different efforts happening. Some of it is recovery support services and all the different kinds that we described that may or may not be working together but are definitely impacting one another, whether they, you know, realize it. Treatment services, whether they are or are not working with the recovery support services around them, the prevention continuum, social services, the broader community. In theory and, you know, ideally, it all works together to support the individual and to create an environment that is supportive of recovery overall.
Yeah, no, I think Morgan really hit the nail on the head. I think it's also, it's not just about supporting the person in recovery. It's about education and awareness at a broader level, because as we sort of break this stigma and talk about substance use disorder and recovery differently, mm-hmm. That promotes help-seeking behavior, not just for an individual who's suffering, but also for the family, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think as we look at sort of changing the way, the perception, the viewpoint, of this whole continuum, I think that there's a tremendous ripple effect. It's not just about, like, supporting little Bobby in his recovery journey, although we absolutely want to support little Bobby, right? It's much, much bigger than that. And I think by creating these recovery-ready communities, these recovery ecosystems, we also have an opportunity to steer people who may have problematic substance use or alcohol and or other drugs away from ever entering, you know, a substance use disorder threshold and right. needing all of those support services. So when I think about it, I really think about it from the prevention, you know, all the way from, you know, early prevention to intervention to, you know, recovery to treatment to recovery support services, and all supporting each other to create healthy and safe communities, healthy and safe families, you know, which is a public health issue, which is a public safety mm-hmm. issue. It's not just about, you know, the opioid crisis.
Right, right. It almost feels like we're playing whack-a-mole a little bit. Even though I have to say, I'll tell you, I pulled some of the data off of NJ Cares, and you know, so far this year, we've lost almost 1,400 people. And that's 1,400 families. That's every community in New Jersey that is impacted. So I think the timing is perfect. Time is right. And that's just opioid overdoses.
Which I think we have to be careful about when right. we talk about substance use disorder or mm-hmm. addiction, that, you know, we don't get caught up, right? Opioids just happen to be the drug, the trending drug right now. And not only do we miss opportunities to serve broader communities, we also need to pay attention to sort of some of the emotionally charged reactions that might be occurring to this sort of public health approach to the opioid epidemic, mm-hmm. now that it's impacting upper middle class white families,
right?
And when the, you know, trending drug was crack cocaine and it was in the poor black and brown communities, the community reacted very, very differently. Mm-hmm. And so I just am always careful when we talk about, and I don't want to take away from what you just said, which is absolutely true, that is 1,400 lives, that is 1,400 families, and that is every corner of New Jersey, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then look at all of the numbers we're not looking at. So alcohol, untreated mental illness, you know, other drugs.
Cannabis.
You know,
we're seeing a lot of that now.
Cannabis, suicide, you know, all of these other things that are interconnected and intersect.
Yeah.
So I think we just want to be totally cognizant of that, as well as totally cognizant that this is the first time in decades that we've reacted towards addiction like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Marty Mann had some stuff going on in the 80s, and, you know, some stuff went on in the 50s that started to move the needle forward. But it's been a long time since we've approached addiction as a public health issue.
But being a person in recovery, it's a very exciting time.
Absolutely.
And I think the stigma is starting to lift, and just that we're here talking openly about it. The more we talk about it, the less stigmatizing it is. So do we have a recovery ecosystem that exists in New Jersey, like a robust one that we could use as a model, or we're not quite there yet?
I would say we have the beginnings of it and pieces of it in a number of communities all around the state, and we have elements of it in most places in the state. We are, as part of the conference, going to feature a one particular community, and we're going to have a panel discussion of different members of the recovery ecosystem there in that area. It's Atlantic County, New Jersey, so we'll have Sober Living represented, their local opioid overdose recovery program, their recovery community center. And so some of these pieces have been around for several years. Some of them have been around for just a couple of months. So they're starting to work together and have an ecosystem there. And I think that's the case in a lot of communities where, you know, there's some places that have been operational for a while, and then there's some newcomers. And really now we're just having the type of capacity and sustainability to be able to really work together in meaningful ways. So I would say it's starting, but we don't have like a, you know, picture perfect example, certainly not. And we shouldn't, because every community is different and every community has different needs.
Right.
So it's not intended to like pre-describe how a recovery ecosystem should look.
But I think what's so exciting about this conference is everyone who wants to improve on this is going to be in the same place, talking with one another and sharing information with each other. And do you need more volunteers to help with the conference?
Absolutely.
Always.
Volunteers, we need people to help spread the word, because, you know, certainly I would say, you know, CARS, we've been around for about a year and a half now. We have, you know, over 200 members, but certainly not everybody. So we want to make sure, you know, folks who aren't yet connected with NJCARS know about the conference, are able to come out.
So how does someone become a CARS member, for example?
Before we do that, can we just describe the conference a little bit
broadly? Absolutely, yes.
Because it sounds great, but I feel like we haven't adequately described exactly what I would be coming to if I was coming.
Yes.
And didn't
Why
know
would
it.
Someone want to come to this conference?
And so I think really when I think about, we talked about the recovery ecosystem and what it is, it's about supporting people. The conference is about supporting people who are either already working in this recovery ecosystem or interested in working in the recovery ecosystem, or I would say interested in supporting the recovery ecosystem, but that's almost oxymoronical, because people who support the recovery ecosystem are a vital part of the recovery ecosystem,
right?
And so everyone has a role in the recovery ecosystem. And so really, this conference is for anyone in recovery, anyone who's a recovery ally, or anyone who works as a professional or a paraprofessional on the entire addiction continuum. And then what we will be doing is we will be going further into detail through our keynotes, through the panel, and through our breakout sessions about different types of recovery support services, really trying to provide, real-life, pragmatic information that spreads education and awareness, as well as is skill building, so that people can go into their communities with this new information that they've gathered and learned, and do something different, share something different, change their own perception. So I just, what's different about this, because there's a lot of professional addiction conferences and a lot of just professional conferences, period. This has kind of got a new spin to it, where it really is not focused on one part of anything. And it really allows for anybody, community member or individual directly impacted or individual working in the field in any capacity, to be able to have takeaways that help in their role in that recovery ecosystem.
So it sounds like we have a lot of family members that listen to this show. So it sounds like it would be a great opportunity for families who are supportive of recovery.
Absolutely.
Or want to learn more about how to be more supportive of recovery and maybe advocate in their community to create more of these recovery supports, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's two different types of advocating, right? Mm-hmm. And I think at the conference we'll cover both of those.
Good.
Right? The idea of, especially thinking, you were just talking about families of loss or families that have been impacted, right? That self-advocacy and that advocating for your loved one, and or advocating for yourself as a person in recovery, right? I think there's that type of advocacy. And then I also, and that's like the little A. And then there's the big A, which is like, how do I advocate as a community member, as a person in recovery, as a mom, as a friend, as a clinician, for my clients, for my family, for my friends, for the larger view and treatment of people who have ever suffered, from a substance use disorder, for recovery support services, for funding from the state, for, for my mayor or my council to support this ordinance, so I think there's both levels of advocacy, which I also connect deeply with, because we're all advocates in our own right, and learning some of those skills can be really, really empowering for you to understand the role that you can have,
right,
which doesn't need to be super visible and vocal, right? It could be doing small things that you didn't even, that you weren't even aware of, right? But that create this recovery ecosystem that change the way that people who are, in recovery or actively misusing alcohol and drugs are viewed and treated. Mm.
It's a mindset shift overall.
Absolutely.
Toward a recovery-oriented system of care.
Well, I think I remember the first conference I ever went to, and it's so energizing and so exciting to be with like-minded people who are trying to create change but don't know how to go about it. And we're going to have workshops where people can learn some of these skills.
We're going to have some really phenomenal speakers coming from, around the country, but also locally. We've got a great lineup. Our opening keynote is with Tom Hill, who is really, a national expert on recovery-oriented systems of care. He's been doing advocacy work around recovery for decades, and just super knowledgeable, wonderful person to hear from. And he's going to be talking about recovery ecosystems, which is a concept that he's championed nationally for many years. And then our other keynote is going to be from Robert Ashford, who's he's a doctoral student whose research focuses on recovery support, and really how do we provide services that are evidence-based but also, individualized and adaptable and informed. So research-informed practice and practice-informed research, I think, is, what we're looking at with the type of data that we're looking to talk about in that keynote.
And what about some of the workshops? How about a little teaser for...
Sure. Drum roll, because this hasn't actually been announced. This will be the big reveal.
Well,
Just a little bit, just a little tease.
So we're going to have one keynote called Medication-Assisted Treatment, Myths and Biases, which I'm super, super excited about. The presenter is a good friend of mine. And what's going to be different about this keynote, because I think that, you know, we've started talking much more about medication-assisted treatment and medication-assisted recovery, is this isn't going to be your standard doctor sharing with you about the different molecules and how the medicine affects it. And there will be a little bit of, you know, scientific education, but more importantly, it's talking about the role of medication can, does, and potentially should play in recovery, looking at the different ways that medication is misjudged, that people who utilize medication as part of their recovery are stigmatized, and then also connecting that to marginalized populations. You know, the recovery research, and this is, I'm going on a tangent, Recovery Research Institute just came out with a study a couple months ago talking about the disparity between people of color on Caucasian men and women getting buprenorphine prescriptions. And so there's a lot to unpack there. So it's not just about this is what methadone is, this is what Suboxone is, and this is what Vivitrol is, which is totally important education, but that's just one component. Where here we're really more trying to look at and unpack and critically examine like false ideas and old ideas around medication. So I'm super excited about that.
Very exciting.
And then we're doing some peer professional development, and that will be done by CARES.
Peer professional development is going to be Brianna Kelton from New Jersey Prevention Network. CARES, so Morris County Prevention is Key, Center for Addiction, Recovery, Education, and Success. Morris County CARES. All the acronyms. So Donna Bear from that organization is going to be doing a workshop on ethical peer employment practices. So now that we have this peer workforce and we have peers working in all different settings, how do we make sure that we are taking into consideration their needs, you know, as people who are having to draw on their past and on their pain and on potentially their trauma, as well as witnessing trauma in the people that they're serving on a day-to-day basis. How do we make sure that, you know, the people that who are working as peers are able to stay healthy, prioritize their own self-care, and as employers and as organizations, how do we put policies in place that really lend to that?
We will then have a messaging training by Carl Antisel from the Minding Your Mind Foundation.
He's wonderful.
And he is just a phenomenal human and a phenomenal trainer. And it will definitely have the elements of sort of that standard recovery messaging training, because we're imagining there may be a handful of attendees that have never done that. However, what it's more going to focus on, so that first piece of recovery messaging is, how do I tell my story in a way that doesn't perpetuate stigma? Mm-hmm. What are my word choices? Even with the best of intent, that may be perpetuating stigma about addiction and about myself as the teller. Mm-hmm. But then what Carl is going to do is, so he's going to infuse and supplement that with not only what words do I use and how to tell that story, but then looking at why am I telling this story so that it can be purposeful, recognizing and reading and understanding that the story changes sometimes depending on your audience, and then also ensuring that the way that we tell the story not only does not perpetuate stigma, but it also doesn't re-traumatize the teller. Mm-hmm. So how do we tell a story that in many ways oftentimes can have a tragedy in it, that empowers me as the teller and isn't, you know, draining me dry. So that's Carl.
If we go through all of them, I think we don't have a while.
I don't want to go through all of them, but
definitely
I wanted to
register,
give people a taste.
And then you'll
get
the whole lineup in probably next week. I think we'll be sending out the lineup.
So I will put the flyer on our Facebook page for people to register, and it has a link right here. Now, there is a difference in pricing if someone is a Cars member, correct?
Correct.
Yes. So it's probably in someone's best interest to perhaps consider being a Cars member.
Which is free.
Which is free. And I believe a Cars member, it's $15 for the conference. You can't beat that. Non-members is $25, and that includes lunch.
And breakfast and coffee.
Well, you gotta go.
Just real quick, one more thing I wanted to say about the workshop lineup and who the speakers are. So we were very intentional from the outset to make sure that this conference was covering topics that were desired and needed by our members. So we've had members of NJ Cars and also, you know, others who are stakeholders in this field provide a ton of input on what the topic should be, helped us to review. We have a committee of our members who helped us to review all the proposals. So we really worked to make sure this was, not just another conference, not just another, academic, heady thing. It's just really what our members are looking for.
Which I think is just important to connect back to why one might want to consider joining NJ Cars. I think we're a relatively new organization, but we've made a real effort and, intentional, mindful effort to ensure that we're member-driven. We have an advisory board that, to the best of our ability, is diverse based on what area of the field they work in, what area of the state they live in, and what their own, biosocial makeup is.
Right.
The advisory board, Morgan would know the percentage, but has a certain percentage of people that have to be in recovery, wanting to ensure that the voice of the recovery community is involved. And then not only for this upcoming conference, but also for membership, for best practices. We have work groups. We have quarterly coalition meetings where it really continues to be about what do you need? How can we support you? Because that, in my opinion, is what a membership organization is. Mm-hmm. It's not about what NJ Cars thinks is best, right? It's about what our members have expressed that they want and they need so that we can provide that to the members.
Yeah, and on the NJ Cars website, I think what's great is we're trying to get everybody that has recovery-related events throughout the state to be able to advertise it and promote it in the same place. And also, there is a job posting. Also for volunteer opportunities and internships, correct?
Correct. And so that's all at nj-cars.org.
nj-cars.org. Check it out, people.
So you can become a member there. You could see our resource map, which you can search by zip code and find all the different recovery support services in your community. The job posting exchange, the calendar of events, all the things you mentioned, Rocky, great resources, and again, totally free.
And we are looking for all these different committees for people to volunteer and be a part of it.
Right, and a lot of it is conference call or Zoom, because we're trying to bring the whole state together, so it's hard to get us all to one place on a Wednesday night, so we try to make it as convenient as possible for people.
I think if you just Google NJ Cars Conference 2019, you'll be directed to the link, but I checked it out earlier, but I will still post this and encourage people to sign up for this conference.
I think what we didn't say, which I think Morgan and I will get yelled at if we don't mention it, after the conference is going to be the Unite Recovery New Jersey rally, which should be a lot of fun. It's going to be on the green. There's going to be some, exciting, motivational, inspirational speakers. There's going to be a call to action. There's going to be, carnival and lawn games. Bring your kids. Bring, really just a celebration. And it's at the end of recovery month, so we'll also be highlighting recovery events throughout the state, really in an effort similarly to what CAR's mission and vision is about, let's unite as a front in the state of New Jersey, as we've seen other states do exceptionally well. And that's not a slight. This is an emerging field. And in many ways, I sometimes feel like New Jersey is different countries, right? You know, but like really coming together and highlighting and showcasing and lifting up, you know, in the conference, more through an educational and networking and skill building capacity, and then in the evening in a excited, fun, empowering, lifting up and celebratory capacity. So a perfect way to end your day learning and exploring and growing in recovery to then celebrate that in the evening.
Beautiful. So go to TC&J, which is centrally located. Go to the conference from 10 to 3. Have a little cup of coffee or something, and then get ready to celebrate. And
absolutely,
we can get so much more done if we are united and we have one voice.
Which goes back to Recovery Month's 30th anniversary.
Right.
That together we are stronger, which goes back to the theme of recovery ecosystem. Together we are stronger, which goes back, I think, to every family that's ever been impacted and any person who's been able to maintain and sustain their recovery. Everyone will say that, you know, community, whatever that looks like, may be different, but some sort of community,
right,
has been vital for that person's success.
I think it's very exciting.
Absolutely. And we have to give a big shout out to the College of New Jersey, who's our partner in putting on this inaugural conference and rally, and everybody who's been involved in the planning process, all of our sponsors. You know, this is really a unified effort to get this off the ground. So.
And Morgan is too humble, but Prevention Links for doing all of the behind-the-scenes, you know, work.
Yes, and providing staff to help with all of the work that's being done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, we should put a shout out to all the advisory members.
Absolutely.
So Pam, Kim,
Mike, Carrie,
Katie.
I'm not allowed to name everybody.
Katie.
Diane.
Keith.
From Rutgers. We have representatives from...
Okay.
All different aspects.
Mike Santillo, co-chair, Katie Calvaca, Pam Capassi, Cindy Marie Dix is our program coordinator, Kim Govac, Diane Litterer, Bill Lynch, Keith Murphy.
Heather Ogden.
Heather, shout out to
Heather.
Who was trying to go to two overdose vigils in the same night. God bless her. I mean, we're all running around like crazy at the end of this month and... September, but it's a very, very exciting time. Yeah, yeah. So any last-minute things that you'd like to say before we start to close?
Just thank you for, you know, kicking off Recovery with us, Recovery Month with us, and, you know, helping to get the word out about the conference and for the work you do every week on the show to share the hope.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here.
So just as a reminder, again, if anyone wants to register for the conference, I will post the link on the Facebook page probably an hour from now. Do not procrastinate. Sign up for it. If you are interested in helping with any of the committees that are part of NJCARS, we have a membership committee, and the conference committee probably could use some more people since that's coming up very quickly, September 28th, 10 to 3 o'clock. Rally afterwards. I think we covered everything.
I guess the only last thing I would say is if for any reason you're listening to this show and you desperately want to come to the conference but you can't afford it, please reach out directly to Morgan or I or the contact person on the website. Mm-hmm. We want you there.
Good point.
Absolutely.
Good point. We'll make it happen. And I did notice TC&J students also can attend for free, correct? And they have a collegiate recovery program there.
They do.
Very, very exciting. Okay, well, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Marielle and Morgan, for coming today. It went fast, right?
It did.
Yeah. So we will be here next Thursday at 5 o'clock. You can look us up on our Facebook page, Sharing the Hope. See the streaming of the show at any time. If you like our show on Facebook, it helps spread the word to help others. It really is growing, and it's exciting. And thank you so much for spending time with me today. I know how busy you both are. And thank you for sharing the hope of recovery.
Thank you, Rocky.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment
skies
advisory
during the morning hours will give way to cloudy skies for tomorrow. Rain in the afternoon, a high of 49.
Registered investment advisor.
Rain is 80%, rainfall near a quarter of an inch.
Member FINRA.
Mainly sunny sky and 51 on Wednesday. That is April 1st, and I'm not fooling you yet. Sun and a few passing clouds on April 2nd, a high of 64. And occasional light rain on Friday, a high near 65. Temperatures in our area, it is 37 in Raritan, 34 in Franklin, 37 in Stockton, 37 in Ringgoes, 37 in Phillipsburg, Clinton, Highbridge, and Tewksbury. Good morning, Hunterdon. That's Hunterdon Chamber Radio weather.
Tears are in your eyes. Come come to me now. Don't be ashamed to cry.
Welcome back to Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. My guest is here today, Tracy Heisler. She is the executive director of Casa Shaw. Going to find out what Casa Shaw is all about. It's advocates for kids in Hunterdon, Somerset, and Warren counties. Tracy's come on in. It is National Child Abuse Prevention Week, a month for April, and we're going to find out all about it. I'm going to bring on Tracy. Good morning, Tracy. Welcome to Good Morning Hunterdon.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome.